Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Case-Shiller housing report out this week was, in a word, depressing. Home prices down in May, year on year, a record 16%. For all we know, it could get worse. But maybe not. The problem is national, but real estate markets are local. The slump varies by region and sometimes by block. Could we, might we, should we be hitting bottom soon? This hour On Point will go to L.A., Philadelphia, Boston, and Chicago to ask what's going on street level with American home prices. And I should remind everybody, listeners, you can join the conversation and get to the On Point podcast at our brand new website, onpointradio.org. We've redesigned the whole thing. You can now share comments right there on all of our shows. So keep the conversation going right there, onpointradio.org. We hope you'll check it out. We are going to touch down across the country this hour with people who really know their markets. Joining me first for a big view from Philadelphia is Susan Wachter, professor of real estate and finance at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. She's a big picture analyst of real estate nationwide. Susan, welcome back to On Point.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Tom.
It's great to have you. Okay, it's sad to have to do it, but we've got to toot our horn just a little bit first. 2 years ago, you were with us. We were looking at these crazy loans. You know, you don't have to have any proof of income or anything else, and yet they were going out the door. And we said, our guest said, you may have said in that conversation, Susan, this could have dire consequences. Sadly, I guess we were right, and they have arrived.
Yes, they have. We are right in the middle of it. Maybe the worst of it.
You saw the numbers this week. I've seen economists saying all kinds of things. We're going to get up close with real estate markets across the country. But what do you see? Maybe touching bottom here? Or do we have, the possibility of another big slide?
It's too early to say we are at the bottom. There are some signs, however, some good signs that at least the slowing of prices. Prices are still falling, but the fall appears to be slowing. That's good news.
What is driving this now? Is it the credit crunch? Is it general economic fear? Is it the concern that if I buy now, it may be worth less tomorrow? How do you prioritize the headwinds, Susan?
It's all of the above, and of course, it's very local. The regions differ, and even within regions. But for the whole U.S., we've got the major issue of the lack of liquidity. Where are you going to get a loan if you're not a prime borrower? And even prime borrowers are facing higher interest rates.
If people go into a bank now for a mortgage, what are they facing that they might not have faced a year ago?
Well, they simply have to have good credit. Impaired credit is now a problem.
And impaired credit, how tightly is that being defined? You have to be perfect, squeaky, clean, AAA, whatever that means these days?
Well, not AAA, but we're into kind of details here. But if you qualify for a prime loan, that is if your credit score is over 650 or so, you will be able to get a mortgage. The mortgage will be with more down, and the mortgage will be higher interest rates. So no matter what, there are headwinds.
What's a typical interest rate now?
If you're looking for the fixed rate mortgage, which of course is the least risk mortgage, you're going to be 6.3, 6.4, and it's going up to 6.6. So these are actually changing week to week.
6.4, 6.6. I'm looking here at these recent numbers, May on May from Case-Shiller. Prices down 28.4% in Las Vegas, 28.3% in Miami, 26.5% in Phoenix, but some with improvement or not so bad. Charlotte, North Carolina, down just 0.2%, 3.1% in Dallas, down 4.8% in Denver. Prices actually up in Cleveland, 2 or 3%, up 1% in Boston. They found in Charlotte in May compared to a month earlier. Is there a national picture you can paint? Is it coastal versus interior, or where are the ups, where are the downs? What does the profile look like, Susan?
Well, there's just no doubt about it. The coastal numbers are far more dramatic than the regions in, like Texas, for example. California, Florida, seeing far more declines. And it's not just simply coastal. It is actually Florida, California, Arizona. These are the top half of the metropolitan areas that have the major declines are in these markets. So they're very concentrated. That said, prices are declining throughout the United States year to year. And again, if you look month to month, you're actually seeing slower declines and in some cases very slight price bottoms. But this is going to be very volatile. This is much too early to call that this is a bottom.
Let's get out on the street and get into some of the particulars. We're going to do that right across the country. Susan Wachter in Philadelphia, please stand by. I want to go right now to Los Angeles. And Peter Viles, writer and senior producer for the Los Angeles Times LA Land real estate blog. Peter, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
Get us down street level in California, LA. I know you've got many markets there, but first of all, California, what's the big picture?
Well, the big picture is prices down, say, 25 to 30% year over year. But in some areas, it's 5 or 10%. In some areas, it's 45, even 50%. So you have, within California, you have, you know, pockets of relative strength and pockets of relative weakness.
Geographically, where is it better and where is it worse within the state?
It's worse inland and it's better towards the coast, to put it, you know, simply.
And what's the range? How are the best spots doing like what? What are the worst spots doing like what?
Well, let me give you the worst. A place like Hemet, which is a desert community where prices are down 45% year on year, and foreclosures are piling up by the hundreds.
That's pretty bad. At the other end?
Well, Beverly Hills, where you can count the foreclosures on one hand, and prices are holding steady.
Despite Ed McMahon's troubles.
I'm sorry?
Despite Ed McMahon's troubles.
Well, he's not yet in foreclosures, I understand it, but
right.
As they say, you know, you have single-digit foreclosures in a place like Beverly Hills.
Within cities, let's say, by price, can you characterize what's moving and what's not? Is there a better size or price of home to have in this market?
Well, our market is becoming dominated by foreclosed houses. It's in
wow.
the Los Angeles area. 40% of what's selling is in foreclosure. So,
wow.
You know, if stuff is cheap and cheap stuff is, you know, foreclosed stuff is cheap, that's what's selling. As you get higher in the price range, stuff is selling if it's priced realistically. If you're looking to get back the money you spent 2 years ago, you can have a very hard time selling your house. You probably won't sell it.
So if I'm at the tippy top end, I don't know, you know, millions, 10 million and above, how am I doing?
Well, that's an entirely different market, and that market's actually okay. If you go to Malibu, if you go to the coast, you know, there are buyers, and a lot of them are, you know, have to figure out what their money is worth in dollars because their money was made in another currency. I mean, you have wealthy foreign buyers. 10 million and above, it's a small market, but it's a headline making market. So that market is almost completely separated from the conversation we're having about, you know, availability of credit and subprime lending and foreclosures.
So maybe Russian, Saudis, I don't know, people who are rolling in the dough.
Yep. 2 years ago, everybody was talking about the Saudis, and now everybody's talking about the Russians. I've even heard of a real estate firm here where, you know, people are trying to learn Russian because there is a lot of Russian money coming into the United States.
Now, take it further down. In California, $1 million is not over the moon, or at least it wasn't.
No.
If you're looking at 400, 500, up to $1 million, what's that part of the market look like?
You know, it's mixed. If you go to a place like Northridge, which is in the San Fernando Valley, sort of a middle-class community, maybe a little bit, you know, some white collar, some blue collar. That's probably sort of an average market for us. Prices there are, you know, around $500,000, $600,000. That's an average LA market. Prices there are falling on the order of 20 to 25% year over year. And, you know, you've got a lot of foreclosures. I counted up Northridge as 101 foreclosures. That's a lot. That's the point where, you probably have one in your neighborhood. And, you know, a foreclosed house is sold by a bank. They want to get rid of it. They're going to take a lower price. And all of a sudden, you know, you lived on a house of $600,000, a street of $600,000 houses. All of a sudden, the bank just sold one for $450,000. And it looks a lot like your house. You know, that's the sort of ripple effect of these foreclosures. You know, they're not necessarily different kinds of houses. They were different kinds of borrowers and different kind of loans. And when one comes into your street, all of a sudden nobody's talking about, ooh, the neighbor's got $700 for theirs. And, ooh, the bank just took $450 for that one.
Are people talking about a bottom? I'm reading here Bloomberg.com, and they're saying California led the U.S. into the worst housing recession since the 1930s. Now it may be the first to find the bottom. They quote Mark Zandi at Economy.com saying California is having a wrenching decline in wealth, but this is a cathartic event that will lay the foundation for recovery. This signals the beginning of the end, he's saying.
Well, people are talking about a bottom, but that doesn't mean we're close to one. And, you know, a website I really like, Calculated Risk, which is a blog about economic issues, did an interesting post this week where they said, you know, these things come in waves. And when we get to the bottom of one wave, that doesn't mean it's the final wave. And clearly, we're working ourselves through this first wave, which is the subprime wave, which is first-time borrowers with shaky credit who bought houses they couldn't afford at prices that no longer exist. That's what's shaking out and coming into the market. If that's the extent of the problem, yeah, we're probably fairly close to the bottom. But most people who watch this closely say that is not the extent of the problem. And once you get through, you know, you shake out the weakest hands in the game, if you will, of the buyers, then you get to the next weakest and the next weakest, and that there will be another wave. And this is the, you know, it's the big question out here. You know, does the do the problems we're seeing in a place like Hemet, which has 500 foreclosures.
Out of how many, I don't know, what percentage?
It's a city of 70,000 people, very fast-growing, blue-collar city way out in the desert, 500 foreclosures, prices down 40, 45% year over year. Do those problems move their way towards the coast? And this is, you know, it's a question we don't have the answer to. But, you know, the fact that we've seen this huge wave of subprime, you know, foreclosures, and it appears maybe that wave is cresting, that doesn't mean that's the extent of the problem.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about real estate realities this hour, homes and housing markets across the country, what's selling, how and where, and whether we're done with the nosedive or not. We've been joined by Susan Wachter at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania, from Philadelphia. Peter Viles is with us from Los Angeles. He writes the L.A. Land Real Estate blog there. Let's take a call right now from Cincinnati, Ohio, and Charles. Charles, you're on the air. What do you know?
Hi, Tom, around here we have a huge number of condo developments along the Ohio River that depended on people selling their homes to buy these $500,000 condos, and I was wondering how the housing market dip in home sales is affecting these developments in places like here in Cincinnati and around the country.
Well, we're far afield. We'll go to Chicago in a moment. Let's see Susan, what can you say, first of all, about condos in general versus single-family homes? And then what about this problem of people need to sell to buy, and so are we in a lockup on that front?
Yeah, exactly. The condos are suffering all the problems of single families. In addition, they're suffering the problem of single-family sellers can't sell, so who's going to buy? But the in addition is that condos were, in fact, even more speculative since we had a lot of investment demand there, investors building them, not for living in them. So there are more empty roofs on top of the condos. I don't know the Cincinnati situation specifically, but throughout the nation, this part of the market is hurting the worst.
Let's get a little closer. Joining us right now from Chicago is Susan Diesenhaus. She's business and real estate reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Susan, it's been a long time. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So let's look big time at Chicago first. Is there an overall story there, and what does it look like, Susan?
Well, according to the latest figures from a variety of sources, the number of houses being sold, the sales volume, is down about 30% for existing homes and close to 60% for new homes.
Okay.
In the first quarter, prices were down about 11% for the area immediately around the city of Chicago and about 18% around the greater metro region.
Mm-hmm.
One of the major issues, I think, for Chicago is that employment has fallen precipitously. The number of new jobs created from May of this year back for 12 months was down 89.5% compared to the previous 12 months, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago.
Yeah.
So if people don't have jobs, they're not buying much of anything.
So is there rumor of a bottom there, or still fear, given the job numbers, that it could get worse?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're still in the midst of the cycle here. And another tremendous issue that the region's going to have to deal with is that there's an enormous supply of new condominium units and townhouses coming online in the city of Chicago, which is the strongest market in the area, or one of the strongest markets. So that's by the end of the year, we'll have to see how many of those get absorbed and how many are left sitting on the market.
So there's a little bit of the condo story from Chicago. Susan, when you cast your eye more widely around the Midwest for a long time, maybe even now, the word was that things hadn't gone up so high there, so they weren't so tippy and in trouble now. Does that seem to hold true? Do you have markets which have been kind of steady as she goes through all this trouble, or how widespread is the downturn?
Well, it would be nice if steady as she goes were the case, but unfortunately it's not the case. For instance, in terms of price declines, a 10% decline in 1 year means that at least 2 years of appreciation was wiped out in one single year here. And we have had some major home builders decline and go out of business. And others are really struggling. And, you know, they're trying many different tactics to draw in buyers, but it's very rough going.
Peter Viles in Los Angeles, I think I heard some stories from you about the extent to which builders are going to move homes in Malibu, you name it. What have you heard?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a very tough market for home builders. One saving grace out here is that the city of Los Angeles is not dominated by new construction. It's pretty built out, so we don't have the huge inventory of new homes. But when you get into the outlying areas where the big foreclosure problem is, you have a lot of new inventory, and the builders are doing whatever they can to move it. With condos, which you were discussing a minute ago, you're just seeing them go to rental. I mean, they would build a big condo complex and hope to sell the units for $800,000. And all of a sudden the sign says, now in the 700s, and all of a sudden the sign says now for rent. So, and you can rent the condos. You know, one strange sort of offshoot of that is we're seeing higher rental prices in this market in part because we have new product coming on the market that was intended to be owned, but is now sort of luxury rentals. But it's a very tough market for home builders. There's almost no home building going on in Orange County, which had been a hotbed of high-end home building. So it's tough out here.
Susan Wachter in Philadelphia, look again at that national map with us for the less volatile market. Susan Diesenhaus in Chicago saying it's pretty rough even there in the heart of the Midwest, and even when she casts her eye out away from the city and its immediate suburbs. Where do you see calmer waters, if you do, Susan Wachter?
There are calmer waters, but certainly not in the industrial Midwest. The industrial Midwest may not have had the run-up, they did not, that they had on the two coasts, but they are now suffering the downdrafts from the loss of jobs. And the real concern is the dire scenario going forward is that loss of jobs becomes nationwide. We go into a serious recession as opposed to this almost recession. So then markets where prices, in fact, haven't gone up in a kind of a bubble and now in a bust, they'll go down no matter what.
Let's get a call from Beaufort, South Carolina. Kenny, you're on the air.
How are y'all doing there?
Pretty well. What do you see, Kenny?
Yeah, very interesting. So many things going on, old and new. Some of these things boil down to numbers, which we hear mostly of. But so I think that the philosophy of the trigger here is people borrowing too much and also us using single-family housing as an investment. It's always been a good investment, but when we actually label it as an investment and put it in that arena, then there's room for abuse, and we're just borrowing too much. Everybody's just getting in on it, and when that happens, it's kind of like blowing up a balloon. All of a sudden, pop, it can only hold so much air. I would be curious, I'll share with you about my market. This is Beaufort, South Carolina. Do not have much industry here. It's mostly retirement. It's probably 70-plus, maybe even more percent retirement.
Okay.
And a lot of hotels. And then a lot of low income, and then there's us stuck in the middle here trying, and I work in the financial sector.
Right.
And it's very tough because they stopped building just cold turkey. I mean, it was like you woke up one morning and all of a sudden nobody was building any houses. It was really, really seemed that fast.
So tough to get it if you need it in the middle. Let's look at a couple of things that you raised there. Susan Wachter, first to you on the kind of mentality of buyers and sellers now. Kenny says it drifted into a bad place. Do you see the fundamental mentality of the way people think about real estate changing?
Certainly, for now they are. This is clearly where we had upward price expectations that got away, we're now in a situation where people are expecting prices to fall, and where that goes, we don't know.
California, Peter Viles, what about there? I mean, you had real estate fever like nobody's business. Do you sense a fundamental shift in people's attitudes, outlooks, expectation, maybe the way they understand their own finances vis-a-vis housing?
Definitely. And the caller from South Carolina made a great point about people's approach to debt. You know, the bubble we were in, and it's a very simple thing, a bubble. You know, it was a bubble in housing prices, and it was a bubble in lending against those prices. And people's approach to debt changed very dramatically, and debt became seen as opportunity. You know, the bank will give me $800,000. That's great. I had no idea I could get so much. And people saw that as an opportunity, as a chance literally to build wealth. And, of course, you know, debt in general is not an opportunity to build wealth. It's an opportunity to build a large obligation that you have to pay back. You know, just as an example in the news, there was a family, it's kind of off topic, but in Georgia that had been given one of these homes on ABC's Extreme Home Makeover.
Yeah.
And they're losing it to foreclosure
because they
borrowed against it.
Wow.
Now, we can all sit back and say how silly they were and how foolish and maybe even greedy.
They weren't alone.
They were not alone. They saw an opportunity. Wow, we can borrow against this house and achieve our dream of owning a business. They were not unusual in that view that borrowing was, here's my chance.
Mm.
And, you know, throughout history, you know, debt has been pretty onerous. It's generally a bad thing to be in debt. But in this past period of 5 years, money was so easy to come by that it was seen as your chance to get some and put it to work and build some wealth. And that idea, turned out very, very badly for a generation of first-time, you know, home buyers, certainly in Southern California.
And yet people are always looking for that main chance. Susan Diesenhaus in Chicago, what about is there a here's my chance thread out there somewhere right now? People looking for bargains. Or what about retirement homes, second homes? Are people looking at this bad market to snatch up bargains there? Do Chicagoans look down on that South Carolina coast where Kenny called from, or I don't know, up in Wisconsin for second homes? What's that market like?
Well, I think there are always some opportunities in prime locations, and since prices are coming down, there's always a chance for a great buy here and there. But one element that buyers have to contend with now in the Midwest, and I would suspect nationwide, is that lenders have tightened the criteria so that it's really difficult to qualify for loans, to go through all the paperwork, and to actually get the money that you need to make a purchase. I interviewed one gentleman who was in the real estate business and is now retired and is an investor. And he wanted to buy a condominium in one of the hottest neighborhoods in downtown Chicago. And he wanted to put 70%, he wanted to pay for 70% of it in cash,
mm-hmm.
and only borrow for 30%. And he just could not believe the amount of paperwork he had to go through in order to get that rather modest loan.
Even with 70% down, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really shocking example. And I interviewed a number of other buyers in a story of mine that will be coming out next week on the Friday Tribune, just talking about the difficulty buyers are having in just getting mortgages. So, you know, everywhere you turn, there are risks and issues to contend with.
Susan Wachter, what about the big element here of boomers looking toward retirement maybe toward downsizing or moving to different markets? How is that likely to factor into this big downturn?
Well, the fundamentals are actually good, even though there is a retirement component which could be on the downside for some markets where people are moving away from. The fundamentals long-term is that we are a growing nation. We have 1 million new households coming to market for homes a year. This means that we will get out of this. It may be, however, a long slog before we're there.
And for boomers looking to do that, are they all going to run away from their big houses at the same time, see some kind of price, you know, clunk down as a result, and little houses on the coast become the expensive thing?
Well, I think right now everything is at a standstill. Boomers are not buying second homes. People simply are not buying.
Let's take a call from Ellen in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Ellen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The question I have is, are there any statistics on what's happening with the hundreds of thousands of people who've lost their homes? Are they renting? Are they homeless? I know that the Congress recently passed a bill that would prevent more foreclosures, but that won't take effect for another year. So there will be more people losing their homes. Any ideas about what is happening with those people?
Let's take it to our reporters in the field. Peter Viles, what about when you've got those big foreclosure rates? Where do people go?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have not seen statistics on where they're going and whether some of them are not finding homes and are becoming homeless. But we have a lot of vacant houses in this country, vacant and for sale. So we don't have a housing shortage, and arguably we don't even have a housing crisis. We just have a lot of people in houses they can't afford to stay in. So it's tremendously, the upheaval for these families is tremendous, and particularly it can be harder to rent a house right now in California than it was to buy one 2 years ago. You have to have decent credit in many cases to rent a property. 2 years ago, you didn't need decent credit to buy one. So it can be, as I say, tremendously upsetting. But that said, there are plenty of places to live. There are plenty of vacant houses. And, our apartment market here is tight if you have to become a renter, and prices are firm. But it's not forbidding.
Susan Wachter, what about the local picture? You've got a national view, but what about there in Philadelphia? What peculiarities do you see in your hometown market?
Well, actually, Philadelphia is riding this out in very moderate declines. We're seeing 3% declines in the region, one of the regions that's least hit. We were one of the least bubble regions. That's difficult for us. I want to come back to this question of rentals. Mm-hmm. Nationwide, rents are down. Absolutely, Peter's right. We have a surplus of housing. That's the other side of we bought too much too soon and we built too much.
Rents are down. Susan Diesenhaus, do you see that in Chicago? Is all this surplus housing now on the market pushing rents down or not?
Well, to best of my knowledge, rents have ticked up slightly, but there is an expectation among real estate investors that vacancy rates in rentals will go up and rents will come down. As I was mentioning earlier, there's about 6,000 new condominiums set to come on the market here in downtown Chicago. And during the peak boom year here of 2005 and 2006, they only sold about 4,000 condos. So there's 50% more new units coming on the market than during the best of times, and one could argue this is not nearly the best of times. So it seems likely that rents will come down and vacancies will go up here.
And the job losses you were talking about, are they in part related to the pullbacks in the construction industry, the home building industry?
I'm sure they are. I have not seen a specific breakdown by job category, but of course they must be. I mean, if new construction's down 60%, there's got to be a lot of people who are out of work. I also think that one thing we're starting to see here in a very small way, but it could build in the future, is that home builders are realizing that these large homes that were so popular are just becoming unaffordable, and there's small niche of developers who are building smaller, less expensive homes. And this could be the beginning of, a new trend here where housing is just going to dial back and get a lot more modest.
Goodbye to McMansions. Hello, chicken nuggets. Susan Diesenhaus with the Chicago Tribune. Thank you very much for joining us today from Chicago.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about real estate realities this hour, homes and housing markets across the country, what's selling, how and where, and whether we're done with the nosedive or not at all. We've been joined by Peter Viles with the Los Angeles Times. He writes the L.A. Land real estate blog there, joins us from L.A. From Philadelphia by Susan Wachter. She's a professor of finance and real estate at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. Right now we're joined from Boston in our backyard by Kim Blanton, real estate reporter for the Boston Globe. Kim, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So if I got these latest numbers right, maybe Boston's not in the worst shape. What do the numbers look like lately?
Well, the numbers here are not good. They're not good anywhere. Sales and prices are down. In the second quarter, the statewide median price went down about 9%, and sales were down 15%. We definitely have probably a year to go. But if you compare Boston to some of the other parts of the country, I think people here feel kind of lucky because you know, prices in L.A. since they peaked and are down 30%. San Diego's down about 27%. Boston is prices down are down only 12% from their peak, which was way back in 2005. Our market peaked earlier. We're thinking we may come out of it earlier, but generally the market is still down here. But like I said, not by any means as dire as the rest of the country. And it also bears repeating what you mentioned, Tom, just in passing. This is the first time we've had a national housing downturn since the Depression. We've had rolling housing downturns in Texas and California, in Florida, here in New England in the early 90s, but the whole country is being hit, and a lot of it is for the same reason, low interest rates, subprime loans, and a lot of bubbles in a lot of places.
Let's take a call right out of your market, Kim. Let's go to Noel calling from Melrose, Massachusetts. Noel, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I love your show, and I'm a WBR supporter.
All right. What do you know, Noel?
Well, I'm a homeowner in Melrose, Mass., and I'm actually in a house for about 6 years, and I think this market downturn, pricing reduction, is actually an opportunity. I saw a new house come onto the market, one that we've been, my wife and I and two kids have been looking for a while, but in the Melrose market, we simply couldn't afford this size of house. And I've seen this one's house, this price, depressed 10%. And it's made it an opportunity for me to move into the house that we want and we want to raise our kids in. My current house, I sold it. I feel lucky. I sold it in 9 days for full asking. So I think that this is an opportunity, and I do feel lucky.
So you pulled off the trapeze act, Noel. You sold it and bought and managed to do it in 9 days. I mean, these days, that sounds like a miracle.
Well, I'm still on the wire. I closed on the new house in 7 days.
Good luck to you. Kim, what do you say to that? Who, you know, what does it take to be able to tell that story these days in terms of asking price, expectations, and all the rest? If people want to make a move, turn it around, make it happen, what does that require?
Well, first of all, it requires getting financing, which is still high, hard to do, so your caller must be in pretty good shape on that. But we are seeing this phenomenon happening in some of the Boston suburbs, and it's most dramatic in the cities and towns that have been hit by foreclosure. Now, Melrose is not one of those cities, but prices there are down about, I think, about 2% for the first half of the year. So, you know, you see prices going down. That's what brings people back into the market really dramatically. In some of our areas that have had foreclosures, a lot of Latino cities, some black neighborhoods in Boston, prices have come way, way down very dramatically. And they're causing sales actually in those cities and towns to go up in the first half of this year. So people are responding definitely, just like your caller, to some of these dramatic drops. And that's why I say I think Boston, we're a little bit farther along in the cycle. Our market overall in Massachusetts is down, but you see these odd little textured differences going on in a foreclosure city in the suburb of Melrose, which is a leafy kind of middle-class suburb in Boston, people starting to take opportunities. We're also different in Boston because unlike L.A. and even Chicago, where I'm from, we haven't had a lot of building, especially out in the suburbs. You know, you cannot buy a huge tract of land like you can in Florida that developers have been doing in Florida and just build. So we don't have the excess housing supply that you see in other parts of the country. And I think that puts a little bit of a floor on our market as well.
Let's take a call from Dedham, Massachusetts, and Laura. Hi, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi. I wondered if the professor might be willing to discuss New York for a minute.
Sure.
Because my father died, my sister and I are selling a house in New York, and it's a pricey house, so it's not the most pricey for New York or L.A. or something. It's on the market for $3.5 million, which I know I shouldn't be complaining. But
and where is it in New York, Laura?
Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Oh, so it's a Tony kind of neighborhood.
It's a brownstone, but it's not the kind of thing that I think an international investor would come in and buy or something, and it's a family neighborhood. And I'm wondering, the lack of bonuses, it seems like New York might have lagged in the problems, but maybe they're beginning to hit, and I wondered if you could address that.
The lack of bonuses in the financial market. $3.5 million, how many square feet do you know, Laura?
It's about 5,000.
Susan Wachter, can you cast your eye north toward New York and tell us something about it for Laura?
Yes, Laura, you're right on. The prices in Manhattan have held to date, but they're likely to fall, and they're going to fall because of the loss of jobs. It's exactly right. New York City is getting ready for this. The state is getting ready for this. New York is likely to be one of the lagging states. While we'll start to see recovery in Boston and California, New York is really going in right now. The suburbs of New York have already seen pretty dramatic price declines, but not Manhattan. Not sure about Brooklyn, but Brooklyn might be like Manhattan, where prices are beginning to be soft and falling.
Peter Viles, in Los Angeles, what about in L.A., in that kind of market? I'm not sure what the equivalent is. You don't exactly have a Brooklyn there.
Well, that would be West L.A. I mean, Brooklyn, Park Slope, Brooklyn is an extension of Manhattan. It's, mm-hmm. High-income, white-collar, buyers. And, the high-income, white-collar, if you will, part of Los Angeles is holding its own. I mean, the prices are down. They're down anywhere from, 5 to 15, even 20%. But they're holding in there, and there is a market here. It's dire, it's historic, it's the worst since whenever, but there is a market. And the market is about half as big as it was when it peaked. So our home sales are running, at about 50% below the peak levels. But they're still running. Things are still selling. And if you have a nice house in a trophy neighborhood and you price it realistically, you will get more than your asking price pretty quickly. But the key word is realistically. And, you see houses that in nice neighborhoods that sit on the market forever because the seller wants to get a certain price based on what the seller believes about the market. And the market will tell you what the price is. And there's a price for almost every home. But, we just have not seen in these better neighborhoods, we haven't seen the real price declines.
Kim Blanton, what do you say to Laura? Here she's sitting on a house. It came to her because, sadly, her father passed away. But it's in the kind of market that she described. She's sitting perhaps with her sister and family thinking about that price. $3.5 million, somebody's told them that's the asking price. What's the psychology now? Someone in her position, if it's not moving right away, do you hang on and slowly whittle it down? You try and whack the price down before it ever goes on the market. What's the wise way?
Well, I would think I know about what's happening in downtown Boston, and the higher end markets are getting hit a little bit, and we have a big financial industry here in Boston, just like they do in New York, mm-hmm. and that certainly is going to take its toll to some extent. But these high end markets, there are a lot of people with a lot of money, and I don't think that the downtown Boston market, and I know Manhattan has held up pretty well. Maybe the price isn't quite what she wants to get. She's probably had a lot of appreciation fairly recently on that house.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that, a realtor would tell you not to do dramatic drops. Certainly you have to keep lowering the price to kind of meet where the market equilibrium is. But, the high-end markets they're doing okay. People have money. There are people with money, believe it or not. We've got a real tale of two kinds of real estate markets going on in this country. The high-end has softened, but it's not in terrible shape as far as I can tell. Here in Boston, we have a few really nice, leafy, beautiful suburbs where the probably kind of upper middle-class people live, like Brookline and Newton. Sales are doing well. They may be down a little bit, but prices are up. They're bidding wars for houses in these suburbs of Boston. And I would think that, the New York market, like Park Slope, is not going to crash. I don't think so, anyway.
Let's hear from Hank in Columbia, South Carolina. Hank, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been in high-end remodeling for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And about 10 years ago, I saw this debacle beginning to form. I knew that the bubble was going to burst. You can only build cheap houses and sell them to people who can't afford them for so long. And about 2 years ago, I moved out of remodeling and went into tile setting because when the new construction business bombs, the builders move into remodeling, and I figured I could move into a field that most wouldn't.
Is remodeling holding up, Hank? Let me just ask you that, first of all. I mean, are people pulling in their horns so much that they're not even remodeling now because they're afraid they won't get their money back out of it?
No, I think right now remodeling is doing great because right now you have a chance for getting cheap labor, and actually materials have come down a little bit because the new construction isn't using them.
Yep.
And so but the problem is, I didn't want the competition of all these builders moving into remodeling.
Right.
And so I moved into a slightly different field that's a little more specialized. But in the Columbia area, I have friends that are builders that are new construction, and they're hurting. They are hurting big time. You can ride around any of the housing developments in Columbia, and there's a lot of them. And there are hundreds of vacant homes that are finished.
Wow.
And they're still building new homes.
Yeah,
it just doesn't make sense.
Perpetual motion machine. Hank, you say you saw this coming 20 years ago. Maybe you've got a beat on the future. What do you see looking out now in your neck of the woods and beyond?
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't see, one, there's too many empty new homes sitting vacant to be able to continue building new homes. Somebody has to either start renting the new homes, forget about trying to sell them. And I had a client that is a mortgage broker, mm-hmm. and he told me that he could qualify me for a $500,000 mortgage. And it's a joke. He never even asked me how much I made a year. And he's ready to set me up on a $500,000, $500,000 mortgage. And that's the kind of thing that's been going on. They're qualifying people who can barely afford to pay rent for these outrageous mortgages.
Of course,
at low interest rate.
Right. Of course, that was then, and that's pretty much over. But Peter Viles, what about the issue of people who are trying or tempted to time this, trying to, you know, buy in if they're not in already at the bottom of the market? What do you say to them?
Well, what I say, and I get asked a lot, and I always say the same thing, it's not very exciting, but, you know, are you thinking about buying a house? If you can afford to buy the house and you want to live in it for, you know, 6 or 7 years and be happy there for 6 or 7 years, buy it. But don't buy it because you think this is the market in 2 or 3 years, you know, this is the bottom, and 2 or 3 years from now, you're going to flip it and get out and make a lot of money. That's a game for people who, want to live on a financial high wire. That's not a game for somebody who lives, you know, paycheck to paycheck and is trying to, you know, build a nest egg. There are attractive, you know, opportunities to buy houses. You know, a house on your favorite street that you've always wanted to live on might be available. You should buy it if you can afford it. You should not buy it because you think that, you know, this is the bottom and 3 years from now you'll refinance, you'll never really have to pay for the house, that kind of thing. Because, it's very likely that we have another leg down here. I mean, we could be at the bottom, but we could also have another 20-25%, you know, downside here. And if you put 15% down and prices go down, you've lost your down payment. You've lost your nest egg.
Boy, pretty soon we're tossing around 20-25% chips like there's no tomorrow. That's real money. Walter's calling from Ames, Iowa. Walter, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. We moved, my wife and I moved from the Boston area to Ames about 4 years ago in the height of all this.
Yeah.
So we paid a certain amount for our house. It was under $200,000.
Okay.
And we'll be moving next year because she's finishing her dissertation, her PhD here.
Right, right.
And we just learned people down the street who have a house comparable to ours has sold for well under what they paid. So now we're going to have to take a big cut.
And where are you going to be trying to move? Do you know yet, Walter?
Well, we'd like to go back to New England, but certainly not the Boston area.
If you're cut way down from 200, that's going to be difficult. Have you thought about where your price might go? How much below 200 you may have to aim?
Well, we'll have two incomes at that point, so
right.
That will change. But I'm really angry. I'm really angry that we're put in this position by greedy people
mm-hmm.
who have made all this money by, you know, subprime loaning and so forth. And now, you know, we're just, you know, doing what we can to get my wife educated and,
right.
you know, have this two income. And we're going to have to take a huge cut on the price that we paid for this house.
Yeah, Walter, thanks for calling. Susan Wachter, there is the rub. I mean, here's Americans just living, just doing the right thing, not speculating, and they get caught in this twister and may end up losing, you know, the size of chunk of money, which for this family is really important, really through no fault of their own. They weren't trying to make a million on some quick, you know, cash on a new condo development in Florida.
Yes, and I don't know Walter's personal situation, but people in his situation could very well be stuck in a very deep sense if, in fact, he took out an 80% mortgage, which is not excessive. He perhaps can't sell his house for, let's say, 75% of its value, which case he can't pay back his mortgage, which means that there's a threat to getting a job, getting back to where the job market is after, you know, investing in education, all good decisions at the time. The system matters, and we had a system that, to be blunt about it, made no sense.
Somebody was not watching here. Peter Viles, How will people know when, in fact, we've hit the bottom? Or is it always in the rearview mirror that is known?
Yeah, it's the same as when we've hit the top. It's hard to judge. You know, Alan Greenspan, who's, I think, justifiably coming on under a lot of criticism for what has happened, you know, was famous for saying these things are hard to recognize when you're in them. You know, it's hard to pick tops and bottoms. You know, that's why investors make a lot of money if they're right. But, one simple, back of the envelope way is, you know, housing prices have hit bottom if you can buy the house and rent it out and make money. You know, if rents will pay the mortgage. So the family in Iowa, if prices were low enough, they could just rent the house out and pay the mortgage. The problem in a place like California is prices are so disconnected from rents. If we go to a place where it makes sense to rent out houses to pay the mortgage, we have a long way down to go.
That doesn't sound like any kind of firm footing.
No.
Oh, man. Kim Blanton in Boston, what about it? Are you starting to feel some, you know, some sand under your feet there, or not yet?
Maybe a little sand, most of it on the beach, but you know, I have to say that one of the things, I've covered the economy a lot in my lifetime as well, and one of the things that happens is if the arrows are all pointing up, everything's good. The arrows are all pointing down, everything's bad. But you can tell maybe when you're in transition, we might be starting to go into that in Boston. When the arrows are pointing different directions, where you see a little bit mixed signals.
Even different directions sounds good to us right now. We'll take that for a start. If it's there, we're out of time. Kim Blanton with the Boston Globe, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Peter Viles at the LA Times. Thanks, Peter.
You're welcome.
And Susan Walker, always good to speak with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Peter.
This is On Point.